On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, I'll be joined by Jason Buttner, a former Pacers scout for 8 seasons. In November, he moved on to a different Central Division team, to the Detroit Pistons, and we'll talk about his career path, highlights from his time with the Pacers, and the impact his father, Quinn Buttner, has had on his life. And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Hi again, everyone. I'm Scott Agnes, and it means a lot to me that you've chosen to listen to this podcast. I hope you've subscribed on whichever your favorite podcast platform is at this point, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google. It means a lot to me. And before we preview the upcoming season, which is less than a week away, and we'll do that on our very next podcast, I want to look back at one of the off-season changes for the Pacers, and specifically in the front office. You may have read, which I reported on FieldhouseFiles.com, how Peter Dinwiddie moved on to the Philadelphia 76ers after his contract was up. Well, there was another front office member who left as well, and that was Jason Buttner. He was with the team for 8 seasons, and in July, he elected to bet on himself and pursue other opportunities. And in a short time after, he received a phone call from the new Detroit Pistons front office and joined that front office in November as the director of draft scouting. That's a huge step up, a job promotion for Buttner, who previously was the manager of basketball administration, and most recently, about 3 years ago, was promoted to being a regional scout, one of three Pacer regional scouts, along with Brian Winters and Mike Bourne. But this is a nice opportunity for Jason, and he meant a lot to the Pacers behind the scenes. He's not a name you may be familiar with. You certainly wouldn't be familiar with his work, and that's because, by design, he worked in the background, and where he did most of his work was gathering intel and background information. It was making calls about high schoolers. It was calling around colleges and learning more about potential draft picks and players they could bring in on free agent deals and players that they might look to add to their G League team that could have potential within their system in playing their style. So he's well connected, calling around all the colleges, especially in this area. He's very well connected with other teams in this league. And so I was finally glad I was able to have him on the podcast to not only talk about himself, but his career path. Maybe that could help somebody that wants to work in basketball, that wants to work in scouting. And also, there aren't a lot of front office people that look like him as an African American. That's something that needs to change across the league, and we'll touch on that as well. Before I get into it, just a reminder to read all of my work here free for the time being at fieldhousefiles.com. You have this, you have the podcast, and there will be a couple more things for you to get even more Pacers coverage from myself. Now here's my conversation with former Pacers scout Jason Buttner. All right, as promised, I now welcome in Jason Buttner, a familiar face, familiar name around Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but no longer as he's elected to move on, and now thankfully willing to join the podcast here as he's just, what, days in on his new job with the Detroit Pistons, staying within the Central Division as the director of draft scouting for the Pistons. Jason, appreciate you joining the show. Congratulations. And I guess to start, I'm just curious what things have been like in this wild time where you're not having, you know, pre-draft workouts at facilities and you're jumping in with a whole new franchise. What have things been like in the first 10 days or so?
Yeah, definitely a lot of balls in the air right now. You know, our executive staff is out on the road getting to use some of their 10 workouts that they're able to see guys in person, put their hands on guys, interview guys, grab some meals. And then, you know, I'm back at the home fort kind of working on our schedule really for next season. So we're kind of working in two parallel planes at the same time right now, closing out this year and preparing for this draft as well as getting ready for next season.
Now, you generally oversee kind of all scouting, and so much goes into it, such as obviously evaluation, but gathering intel and looking at guys' background and talking to anyone you can around them. One of the kind of jokes about this draft has just been how maybe it's the most compared draft just in terms of intel, because that's all scouts like yourself have been able to do for months on end. Do you feel that way?
I was just talking with one of my co-workers about that very fact that, you know, this draft is getting to the point of being overanalyzed. as you know, there's really been not much else for the staff to do. So it's really been sliced and diced every way you can imagine at this point.
And everything's seemingly mostly on video, right? So you're sitting on your computer and Synergy and YouTube or however videos are getting to you.
Correct. And the Zoom interviews as well. Sure. Which is a little bit different dynamic than being able to interview someone, you know, face to face, where you're, you know, getting, you know, the complete body language. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a little bit more fluidity in the conversation. So, you know, there's been an adjustment in every aspect of the process.
And that's a good example. You don't need to touch on this if you don't want to, just out of intel wise. But one of my favorite things in watching you guys after pre-draft workouts is you and a select group of scouts, usually guys behind the scenes, not Larry Bird, not Kevin Pritchard, are walking over to Harry and Izzy's, to Kilroy's. And that's where you can casually observe these guys in a low-pressured situation and see how they interact with the waitress and see how they interact with other guys. Are they confident in their abilities and things like that? You're right. You're absolutely missing out on this year. So,
Yeah. Those informal settings are probably the most useful pieces of information that or one of the most useful pieces of information that you get out of the process, especially in their visits to our facility. So, you know, it really gives you great opportunities to see people's personalities shine, see who, you know, the guy that kind of stays back and is more observant, see the person who's kind of the alpha in the room, see the people that, you know, have maybe a little bit more discipline, a little bit less discipline. And without having that opportunity, you know, you got to find other ways to kind of fill the void.
You have an outstanding career that I want to get to, but first go back to kind of the last few months. First, you elected to move on and kind of bet on yourself and finding a new opportunity here over the summer, growing from your Pacers position, and this opportunity then came about with the Pistons. What was kind of your end game here in the trajectory of your career, trying to advance and find new opportunities and ways where you can contribute to a franchise?
You know, I'm a man of you know, really kind of driven by my faith and purpose. And I just really wanted to go where, you know, I could be of most service and also have opportunities to, you know, grow in my skill set. And, you know, when Troy and Dave Mintzberg reached out to me and kind of let me know what they had going on here in Detroit and about the different opportunities that they were going to have on their staff and the format with which they were going to run their front office and the kind of culture they were looking at building, it was just something different. You know, I gained so much knowledge and so much opportunity working for the Pacers over the last 8 years. And really it's just an opportunity to see a different way of building a team and a different way of running a front office.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because you had been with all the same people, right? When you joined the franchise, the Pacers in 2012, there's Ryan Carr, there's Kevin Pritchard, there's Peter, all those same people. So now you can create a new outlook and learn different ways to do the same type of thing and kind of challenge yourself. And I think the other cool thing is just how you have grown really over the last few years, especially how you started out as manager of basketball administration and grew into a regional scout, I think one of three here for the Pacers. How much do you enjoy going out and being on site and evaluating and filing those reports?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And, you know, there's nothing like, you know, hearing the sneaker squeak and balls bounce and, you know, the swish of the ball go through the rim and just seeing how players prepare for the game, how players interact with their teammates, you know, the physicality. I mean, it's just basketball in general is just, you know, really special sport. And, you know, I love the perspective that you kind of gain by being a scout and looking at it from that point of view.
Before you arrived with the Pacers, you had a different role here locally at IUPUI as an assistant coach. So you kind of balanced, and we'll get into it. Before that, you were even a manager for IU basketball. So you've kind of experienced all different sides, from the coaching to the front office to guys doing every little thing as a manager. Ultimately, is being the front office and working your way up, did you find that was more interesting and insightful to you than, say, being on a bench and coaching guys?
Yeah. When I was growing up, you know, I was always very intrigued by the front office side of things. I used to read, they used to have this book called The NBA Guide, The NBA Register. And that was something that I, you know, read like it was, you know, like my Bible every year. You know, every year when the new edition came out, it was like Christmas to me. And, you know, I always kind of looked at things from a building team perspective and, you know, looking at the stats, that part of it. You know, I think coaching is really a great God-given ability, similar to teaching, which runs in my family. You know, a lot of my dad's side of the family are teachers and professors and college presidents and superintendents and things like that. And so I've always given great respect and held the profession of coaching in great regard, especially even more so when I spent some time with the Black Coaches Association and got to sit in a lot of clinics, and then, you know, having the opportunity to be on Ron Hunter and Todd Howard's staffs at IUPUI. But, you know, as I was going into it, you know, I there was a hope there that, you know, there was going to be some opportunities to work in a front office at some point.
That's two great guys right there, Coach Howard and Ron Hunter. I mean, that had to be a fun coaching staff.
Yeah, it was definitely. It was never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Ron Hunter is endlessly entertaining and various, both how he acts and what he says, and keeps things lively, right?
He does. He's you know, really funny guy, you know, big personality, you know, and loves basketball and you know, looks at it, you know, with a different perspective. And, you know, I learned a lot working for him.
To kind of put a cap on your time with the Pacers, what do you look back fondly about your experience? I mean, it covered 8 years. You were there during the high moments during this last decade, right? The back-to-back years where they went to the conference finals. You saw the low moments where there was trade requests and Paul George getting injured, and then Victor and Domas arriving and beginning to take this franchise to a new height. What will you think back to, Jason, as you consider your time here in Indy?
You know, it's funny as you go through that. It was.
It's a lot.
You know, a lot of ups and downs, but it really didn't feel like that, you know, the entire time. I mean, you know, KP likes to use a phrase, calm waters. And, you know, I feel like for the most part, we generally operated kind of at the middle place, you know, having a good sense of like equilibrium all throughout that. But, you know, the main thing that stands out to me was just kind of the, you know, family atmosphere. You know, it's a family-owned franchise. You know, a lot of the people that were there were people that, you know, I've grown up with and grown close to before my time on staff, and then especially during my time on staff. And, you know, I just, you know, I love those guys, and had always just and will always really have fond memories of my time with the Pacers.
On the other side of that, it's also here in Indy where you started a family and all that. So that also will hold a close meaning to you, obviously.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the good thing is, in my role with the Pistons, you know, I'm going to be able to still be based in Indianapolis where, you know, we've really put in some pretty good roots over there in the Fountain Square area, and, you know, love the community and feel very fortunate that, you know, while we have a 1-month-year-old son and, you know, a almost 3-year-old daughter, and my wife and I are, you know, relatively newly married, you know, we're excited to by the fact that we still get to live in Indianapolis.
Yeah, you got a lot of newness, but that's sweet that you are able to stay here. But I think it's probably made easier now over these last 8 months or so, where everybody proved that they can work remotely. And for you, you just need to be probably in front of technology and then traveling and calling people and such. And so that makes total sense why you can do that almost anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, and that Indianapolis especially is a great place to be based out of to scout. And the fact that you can get to so many different schools and conferences within, you know, 4.5-hour drive, you can touch, you know, down in you know, SEC country, going down to Nashville, Knoxville, you can, you know, get to the Big East, the Big Ten, ACC. So it's really just a great place to be based out of as a guy that's, you know, primarily going to be spending his time watching college games.
Being labeled a scout is kind of a generic term, but there's so much that goes into it. What does Jason in 2020 know about scouting, and what is most valuable, whether it's evaluation or intel that you didn't know, you know, 8 years ago that you would have had no idea about?
You know, I think it really just goes to the process. You know, I try to work backwards. You know, as we kind of came to the conclusion each season, and we were kind of going through, you know, exit interviews and just kind of hearing the things that, you know, maybe we were frustrated about with a player, or, you know, a particular reason a player wasn't reaching his full potential. You know, I always kind of kept a list of that. And, you know, I kind of worked backwards in that, or trying to predict, you know, or ask what questions can lead to that result. You know, how can we predict that this guy is not going to be maybe the hardest worker, or this guy is going to be a nuisance in the locker room, or, you know, those different kind of things that usually make the relationship go south, you know, in the end. And then what are the questions that can help us pull out some of the positive things? So the guys that we really love in the locker room and we love on our team, you know, you're trying to jot down those characteristics and then work backwards to say, all right, what questions can we ask during the process that'll help, you know, push out, hey, this is a guy that is the leader we want in the locker room, is the positive influence on the road, is the coach on the floor, you know, those kind of things. The guys that have great passion for the game, great love for the game, and some grit. You know, how do you ask a staff member, how do you ask an AAU coach to try to predict, you know, those kind of behaviors in the future?
The thing I'm amazed with, and you see it probably more than anyone being right in front of it and draft scouting, is those individuals all like 18 and under, and they can be social media phenomenons. I mean, no better example is Pelicans' Zion Williams, right? Everybody knew who he was. He had millions of Instagram followers. How have you seen players having to navigate and deal with that and manage that? Some take a lesser profile, some totally embrace it, but that's something I'm sure you're all over in your studies and character evaluations, which is obviously a big part of what you do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes, you can't judge a book by its cover. I think how social media is affecting each player is, each player has its unique relationship, I guess, with social media. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them aren't even responsible for their social media. and they have, you know, family members or, you know, PR firms and things like that doing it for them. So, you know, you may see, hey, this guy posts all the time. He's putting stuff up 3 times a day. And then you come to find out he's not even the one doing it, and he's not even into social media. So, you know, you really have to kind of dig down and try to get an understanding of what that player is. Relationship is with social media, and how does social media, I think more importantly, affect that player? You know, do they really?
That's true. Yeah. Are they reading it?
Negative comments. I mean, I think there's been a lot of stories here, and I think you've done some of that work as well, interviewing players that have struggled with the negativity that's out there on social media, particularly in on Twitter, and you know, some players, you know, read that stuff and are greatly affected. And some players read that stuff and it's not even a blip on their radar. And other players do a great job of just avoiding it altogether.
Yeah, that was one story I highlighted last year where Miles Turner just turned it off for a little bit. TJ McConnell admitted he doesn't really do it. His wife runs it just strictly for some ad revenue or some partnerships, I should say. Malcolm Brogdon, kind of the same way. He stayed off of it until he realized it was a good way to spread the word about his Brogdon Family Foundation. So everybody has their different uses, but you're absolutely right. You just can't allow for it to impact you. One last thing in terms of the Pacers, I think that you guys have to continue to do a good job in is finding a way to find good players where you are, because let's face it, Pacers haven't drafted inside the top 10 in forever. I think it's 1989 is the stat I always go back to. So it's finding that value and maximizing it, right? When you're constantly drafting essentially 15 to 25. And to me, that's a gray area where there's no obvious answer every year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think just in general, you know, the approach, not just in the draft, but in free agency and in trades and in the attitude of the team is trying to do more with less.
Yeah.
And trying to get guys that will, you know, outkick their coverage, so to say. And so, you know, that definitely bears fruit in the draft, just by as a product of our success as a franchise. And you know, I think you know Larry and Donnie and KP have done a great job, you know, leading us and you know, kind of training us on, you know, what are the characteristics to look for guys that normally overproduce their predictions.
Who have been some of your mentors throughout all this process? You have obviously a great background working at IU, IUPUI, and now with the Pacers. Who stands out to you? Who's the guy you call if you ever have questions?
Yeah, I mean, I've different, you know, mentors for different things. You know, I mean, there's guys that, you know, I'll go to for, you know, personal advice and family advice. You know, there's
Sure.
guys that, you know, I go to for, you know, basketball advice. You know, there's guys I go to for, you know, career navigating advice. You know, one of my earliest and probably, you know, longest mentors outside of my father would be a guy named Kevin Clark, who was a AD at Temple and is now a chief of staff at Temple University, and who I interned for after Coach Knight left IU. And you know, he's a guy that, you know, I've leaned on heavily, that's, you know, outside the basketball world, that was one of the, you know, first people to really kind of show me what, you know, mentorship is, and you know, the importance of giving back and helping, you know, create a pipeline of talent.
Did I hear correctly that it was ultimately Larry who gave you a call after you were with IUPUI and then that's ultimately how you got in with the Pacers and got rolling?
Yes. You know, Larry and Peter Dinwiddie actually had, you know, a lot to do with that, as far as was plucking me from the Summit League and, you know, finding an opportunity at the Pacers, for me to kind of help them where they felt like, you know, they could use a boost and kind of play to my strengths, and also giving me an opportunity to learn something completely different.
And this was after you had kind of bounced around trying to figure out, it seemed like, what you wanted to do with Philip Morris and then the Black Coaches Association, Impact, which is one of the kind of premier training grounds for so many players, and then IUPUI, and then settled in nicely. I do want to ask just about your dad. Everybody knows the Hall of Fame guy, the TV analyst guy, but how has Quinn Buckner impacted your career in basketball?
Yeah, well, actually, first I'll cover the kind of what you're talking about. You know, it kind of goes back to what I said originally, is that, you know, the way I've approached my career is always kind of going where I feel like I'm needed, and going where I feel like, you know, God's really, you know, pushing me to be without necessarily kind of sticking to a set plan, as far as, you know, I'm going to be this in this amount of years type thing. And
Sure.
so it's funny, you just never really know how your previous experiences will benefit you in the future. But you know, I'm definitely a testament to the fact that, you know, being open and being available and willing to take risks, can put you in great positions to succeed in roles that you never would have dreamed you'd be in when you first started out. So, you know, I'm really thankful for all those different kind of twists and turns that, you know, led me to, you know, my position here with the Pistons. But, you know, going on to my father, you know, he was just a fantastic mentor and a fantastic father, and just a, you know, really, you know, loving and considerate guy that is one of the all-time great leaders and winners in sport. And so there's just a huge advantage to have that kind of guy looking over your shoulder, and cheering for you and pushing you and questioning you and
Holding you accountable.
yeah, and completely holding you accountable. I
Yeah.
mean, you can't have a better taskmaster than Quinn Buckner. So, you know, I'm very fortunate and blessed to have him as my father, and you know, he is the number one reason, you know, along with my mother, for where I am today.
Yeah, I just love wherever we are, whether it's on the road or at a home game. He's always bumping into me, giving me shit about something I said or did, or always
Yeah,
lightens up the
no,
mood,
he's
and you
definitely
got
gonna
to
talk
appreciate
trash.
that.
Yeah, you definitely got to be quick with the tongue around, Pops, because he'll throw some barbs at you pretty quick. So that's one thing, you know, our things, and my mom is really, really strong in that too. So we always joke, you know, the Buckner family table at Thanksgiving, you got to be able to come quick with the lines because, you know, they're pulling no punches there in between stuffing servings.
And I'm sure now not only are they happy for you, but ecstatic that you're staying around. So you're within a short drive, even though Detroit, in fairness, is what, a quick drive, 4 hours north. So that's not too bad either.
Yeah, it's not a bad drive at all. You know, I've already done it a couple times in the last 2 weeks. You know, my father and I had always talked about how fortunate we were to work in such close proximity and, you know, be able to grab lunch with each other, you know, once or a couple times a week and just visit with each other before games or after games. And we knew it wasn't going to last forever, but we definitely took advantage and cherished the time that we had during my years with the Pacers.
Did you ever sit down and watch the Last Dance series with him? And why I ask is because Quinn has friends everywhere. And, of course, that's where I found out how close he was to Michael Jordan, which was just fascinating but not surprising to me.
Yeah, you know, he's just a guy that
he's never been a stranger, right?
Yeah, and I mean, he's a guy that a lot of successful people enjoy being around, and he enjoys being around you know, successful people. You know, I think there's a certain approach to life that you know, those guys have in common, and you know, there's a low tolerance for BS. And, you know, those they definitely enjoy themselves. And I know that, you know, their friendship means a lot to each other when it comes to my dad and MJ.
One thing I do want to highlight is obviously you're a black individual succeeding in the front office, but there's not a ton of people that do look like you, and there needs to be more opportunities. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that in general across the league. Outside of former players, there's not a lot of front office people. There's not a lot of basketball operations assistants, for that matter.
Yeah, you know, it's increased. I mean, I would love to see the numbers, but you know, taking a guess from my first times out on the road back in 2012, 2013 to now, I mean, I'd have to think that the numbers have at least doubled, if not tripled, as far as the amount of, you know, African-Americans that are on scouting staffs, the amount of African-Americans that have, you know, manager, director, and up roles with teams. I mean, you know, the assistant GMs, I'm not sure if there's more GMs, but, you know, I think there's definitely more guys in the pipeline right now. There's a lot of talent there. And, you know, hopefully as time goes on, more and more of those guys get opportunities to run their own franchises. And that's why, you know, I'm really excited to work here with Troy Weaver, you know, in some regards, you know, I feel like, you know, I have a responsibility to make sure that he succeeds, because I know that, you know, his success is important to so many other, you know, African Americans that are, you know, in this industry, you know, besides myself.
I also do want to go back to your time at Indiana as a basketball manager. And there's been a lot of successful managers to come through that pipeline. Ryan Carr is one I think about, of course, the Pacers vice president of personnel. You can go on down the line. Lawrence Frank in the NBA. How would you summarize kind of your experience there? You even worked under Coach Knight for a brief stint, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I didn't work with like Shragi, but yet, you know, Shragi had David George. He had, you know, personally during my time, we had Dusty May.
Oh, yeah.
We had Joe Pasternak. You know, there's obviously got Lawrence Frank, who was there, I think, around Ryan Carr's time. You got the AD, Scott Dolson at Indiana was a manager. So, you know, there's a huge tradition that, you know, other programs such as, you know, Duke and Michigan State have, you know, replicated since then. And it was, you know, a really special time and a really special group. And just the discipline and the kind of friendly competitiveness and the accountability are things that really lead to success in whatever you do. You know, and there's a lot of guys that have had success in other fields. But it's, you know, I think there's probably as many former managers that are out there working in college basketball and, you know, pro basketball, probably more in pro basketball than there are, you know, former players and former assistant coaches of Coach Knight. So it just goes to say how strong that manager program was.
Yeah, long line of tradition. I think you summarized it well. The accountability aspect and discipline is things you immediately think about, I think. I want to end on this note, and I'm sure you get asked about it a lot. Probably your email is clogged about it, but I think it'd be a good time with your experience, your diverse background, and all of your experience. It would be helpful to others. What advice do you share with people that want to strive to work for a front office? What would you offer them or in basketball in general?
Well, I think similar to just sports in general, I mean, you have to be willing to chase opportunity and be available and realize that you're not going to make a lot of money up front to do that. You know, being very coachable and, you know, kind of leading with just a servant mindset, I think are the key things to having success in the basketball industry.
That's awesome, Jason. I appreciate you joining on. I wanted to share about your story, about your successes, and now, unfortunately for us, but you're moving on to the Pistons. And we wish you well and appreciate all you did for the Pacers.
No, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.